The next sugya is turkey.
What?
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. Okay. So this is kashrus, obviously, as you can tell. Okay. So on page 45, we have all of our psukim from Parshas Shmini and Parshas Re'eh that delineate the various types of kosher and non-kosher animals within the realm of birds. Okay. So flip to page 46. Okay. We have the question about the kashrus of turkey or lack thereof is rooted in various Gemaras in Chul. Okay? The Gemara points out in a number of places that whenever the Torah delineates a certain species of animal, it indicates that that animal are in the minority, in the meal. Meaning, for example, the Torah lists 24 species of tameh, of treif birds, right? So the Gemara Chulin says that there are so many types of kosher birds, and there are very few non-kosher birds. The Torah is easy to delineate the non-kosher birds, it's much harder to delineate the kosher birds. So there are so many kosher birds and very few non-kosher birds. The miut are non-kosher. So right away off the bat, you'd say, well, that seems to be great for anything you want to be back to. You'd say, yeah, most probably the birds are kosher. There's a miut that they're not, right? That's the starting point. But of course, the way that halakha works is not like that. And halacha always operates is that if I can't prove it to you, you have to be machmir. If I can't definitively prove to you this bird is kosher, so even though there's a pretty good chance that it is, but lechora we have to be machmir. Now, let's go through and then we can ask more questions later. Okay, let's just get the baseline first. Okay, guys, can somebody tell me what are the criteria to determine a kosher bird? How do you know if a bird is kosher? Yes. What?
It can't be wild, right?
Okay, it can't be a predatory bird. Wait, back up. Back up. How do we know? The Torah tells us, obviously, we all know the simanim for fish and for regular animals, right? So here the kaskeses, right? Fins and scales, right? Chewing cud and split hooves. We're not talking about fish right now. We'll get to that. We'll get to the fish. But birds, the Torah never gives you simanim. It just says, these birds are a treif. So that's totally useless. Because first of all, we don't know what these birds are. And second of all, we don't even know what the identifying signs of kosher birds are. Right, I hope. So number one, Aaron says, number one, a predatory bird, all predatory birds, hawks, vultures, falcons, ravens, are all treif. Okay? What else? What are other simane kashrus of birds? Anything else?
Oh, they can't be mean.
They can't be what?
They can't be mean.
Mean?
Yeah, like they can't like...
Cruel?
Like, eat their, yeah, they can't
well, that's... that. We'll call that predatory birds. Let's see.
You mean like a dog bird or something?
I'm pretty sure I heard something about
that. Let's take it more halakhic terms, not in like vague terms. Okay? So it's a Mishnah Nun. It's a Mishnah... If you look on page 46, the Mishnah Daf Nun Tesav Aleph. Anybody want to read the Mishnah for the sake of my voice? Yeah, go ahead, Aaron. Page 46, the third source. Simani Behem. A predatory bird. Birds that attack are tame. Etz by Yisera.
Extra
toe, in this case, right? The Zephek. What's a Zephek? Anyone? Zephek is the crop. C-R-O-P. The crop refers to part of the... No. The crop is part of the digestive tract of an animal, the bird, called the crop. Okay? Go ahead. These are all C-money. If the bird has these things, then it's kosher. Go ahead. The Korkevan of Niklaf. Korkevan is a gizzard. Right? Everyone know what a gizzard is?
Yes. No, we might not tell
them. What? So, the gizzard, yeah. The gizzard, I think the gizzard is actually the belly button, if I'm not mistaken. I'm pretty sure. So the gizzard, it's the belly button. If a bird has what's called a peelable belly button, a korkevan niklaf, then it's tahara. Okay? These are the simani tahara of a bird. Go ahead, Rabbi Yehuda. What does that mean, Cholikas Ragla? If, have you ever seen a bird on a branch before? So you see like the claws of the bird?
Yeah.
So sometimes the claws are split like this, right? You see that? So if the bird's like that, according to Rabbi Elazar, it's coming. Okay?
What if these things have to
do? What do you mean? If it only has one or two of them? So apparently, those things will never happen. That's the assumption. All kosher birds are going to have, you know, a certain standard of these things. Now, look at Rashi, guys. Next source. Anyone else want to read to us? Is that what I said? Keep going. Doris. Means the trample. Yeah, go ahead. It's seaport of. What does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, not its beak. It uses its claws to grab the animal, it lifts it up, and eats it. So according to Rashi, any bird which eats its prey in that fashion is called an ofadoris in its tummy. Okay? Now, if you look at the next Rashi, there's a couple of daf later in Chulin. Anyone else want to read? He's holding it down with his feet. He's holding down the bird with his feet. He's making it that the bird can't slip away. He's holding down the bird.
Mudrisa. Attacking.
Right.
The ravens.
Cuckoo. A cuckoo. So what is this Rashi and Chulin hold and Ofadoris means? How does Rashi and Chulin tell define it? Be more specific.
It does it like a wolf's predator and prey skills.
It eats its prey when it's still alive. Right? It eats its prey when it's still alive. That's Rashi and Chulin defines an Ofadoris, okay? If you look at Tosfos here, right, what does Tosfos ask over here? Can you read? One second. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Adoris appears but then just Rashi explains.
That's what I have, yeah.
Showcase
it's seaport of.
He might let the grab its prey.
Right.
Might be a minakarka and lifts up from the ground.
Right, so that was the Rashi we saw in Daf Nun Tes, right?
Mikasha Larabin Kam and Rabin Kam as a witness, he answered questions. The Pilu Karnigola is the host of the man, the Purdue also does this.
In other words, chickens also do that, and we know the chickens are kosher. Apparently. Okay?
How do we know the chickens
are kosher? One second. We're not there yet, go ahead.
Mufari Rabin Kam and Rabin Kam explains.
So what does that mean?
It does it that eats its prey alive and doesn't kill.
It doesn't wait for the prey to die. So this is more. Well, this is. This Tosfos seems to conform more to the other Rashi, right? Eats prey when it's still alive. Okay? Okay, so that's all that's relevant for right now. Okay, fine. So that's the basic gist of those Shittos. Now, let's move into what? Tosfos basically says the same thing as the second Rashi, that it eats its prey when it's still alive.
What's the point of the list?
What?
What's the point of the list?
The list of the 24 birds, yeah. You mean? So theoretically, if you knew what all the birds were, you would know what all the kosher birds were also. And if I could identify for a fact all the 24 birds, I would know what's coming and what's not. We can't identify all the birds definitively. It's hard.
How do we know?
What?
Do you know any of them?
I mean, we can speculate. It's hard to know with, you know, precise precision to know what's what, but we can take a guess. Now, guys, take a look at the Shach, okay? The Shach is about page 46. So, the Shach says the following. Asher, are you the Shach? Go ahead, 46. It's talking about, right, being, you can only eat a bird if there's a Masorah for that bird. Go ahead. What does that mean? Meaning what? If a bird has a masorah, then it's kosher. That's it. I don't have to look at the bird. I can assume it's kosher. Go ahead. Dash, go ahead.
Yeah.
Bala Batalashi. So, but let's say it turns out that...
That it either is the predator or
Well, Cholek Esraglav here means that we saw in the Mishnah, it splits its legs like this. According to Rabbi Elazar Barak Tzedek in the Mishnah, if the bird goes like this on a branch with the legs, then it's true. So in other words, if either of those two things are true, that clearly shows us that the Masorah was mistaken. It was not a valid Masorah, and the whole thing is incorrect. Okay? That is the shot, okay?
When we did this Elazar Barak Tzedek,
yeah.
My rabbi said that they have the OU dinner. They eat a bunch of
Good. Very good. Okay, guys, let's flip now to page 47, okay? These are incredibly, not so long. These truths are not valid. These are some tshuvas about various types of birds and their status in terms of kashrus. So, the Rush in a tshuva discusses the chasida. Anyone know what the chasida is?
A storch.
Correct. So what's the din? Are storches kosher? Are those birds kosher?
No.
Why not?
Because they don't share their food with them.
Okay, that's true, but again, that's not the reason why it's true.
They only share food.
Says the Rush, guys, there are certain places that have a Masorah to eat stork. There are places that have that Masorah. But he says that's wrong. It's not a good Masorah, right? But he says that once the Chachm of Israel have a Masorah, that something is Tameh, it's Treif, can never rely on anyone else's Masorah to say that it's kosher, right? Once there's a Masorah, something straight, that's it. You can't have a counter Masorah to say it's kosher.
Can we discuss, where if there is, maybe with board games, if some, or that whole studio,
So this is a little trickier, because Dad's talking about if I go to a guy's house for Shabbos and he's following a shoe that I don't hold of, can I eat in his house? It's a different issue. Here we're saying, should I be able to eat this bird in the first place? That's a different question. I go to a guy's house and he's serving stork for lunch. Can I eat the stork? Pashtus is can't eat this bird. Because it's not a reliable Masorah. That's a good question. What? Probably. Okay. Yeah. It's Tzemach Tzedek, guys, not the Lubavitcher Rebbe. He was also a Tzemach Tzedek. The fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe was a Tzemach Tzedek. This is a different Tzemach Tzedek. He wrote Tshuvas much earlier. He says the following. So I was in Nicholsburg, and in Nicholsburg I saw that people were eating wild geese from the swamp. Now, we know that geese are kosher, right? Seemingly, right? So the question is, I have wild geese, and he says that these geese have wider beaks and wider feet than regular geese, so it's not clear if they're really the same halakhically as regular geese. He also says that you can't tame these animals, they don't accept anybody's authority, they just kind of do whatever they want, right? They're kind of like high schoolers, right? They're kind of just doing what they want, right? No one's authority. So he continues, he's on page 48, he says that these animals were never really common where I lived, but he says, my father was very machbid to never buy geese eggs in the shuk in case they came from these wild geese, which we didn't accept their kashrus. So he says, you should be careful about buying the eggs of these wild geese. Aruch HaShulchan, very importantly, the bottom of page 48 says that if you do not have a personal Masorah about a certain bird, but you go to a place that does have a Masorah, you are allowed to rely on their Masorah. Before we spoke about conflicting Masorahs, that was different. Here, I don't have a Masorah, I don't have one way or the other. But I go to a town where they have a Masorah, I'm allowed to follow their Masorah. Okay. We're going to skip. Okay, fine. Flip down, skip to page 50 for a second, okay? On page 50, we have... first of all, we have the Machzik Bracha, the Chida. The Chida was a very prolific writer. He wrote 75 or so Sfarim. and they're all real size fine. And he talks about this type of animal eating meat, a certain type of a bird called a Lavorian bird. Again, I don't know exactly what all these birds are or what they mean, but he discusses the kashrus of those various birds. But Moshe, from a tshuva, from one of his talmidim, from Ephraim Greenblatt, who lived in Memphis for a while, he wrote the Sefer Rivagos Ephraim. He talks about the status of a bird called the pheasant, right? Ever know what a pheasant is?
What?
A pheasant? What? Yeah, a pheasant, it's like a turkey, but fatter. How many of you... I can't even ask the question with a straight face. How many of you have ever read Harry Potter? How many of you don't want to admit that? Harry Potter. Yeah. So, who can tell me, for some very stupid brownie points, where in Harry Potter is the pheasant Benjamin? It's like a real... It's like a real Bacchus question.
One of the people in the sixth book, I believe, was...
In the fourth book?
Marcus Belby, maybe?
One of the challenges.
He gets pheasants stuck down
in his throat,
and so he uses a spell to open
the book.
What? He says,
For the sake of not embarrassing myself, I don't want to repeat that. Basically, in the beginning of the sixth book, when they're on the train with Slughorn in the compartment, so one of the guys, Marcus Belby, gets his pheasant stuck down his throat, and he has to do some kind of whatever to get it out.
That was the Half-Blood Prince, right?
Yeah, it was. So embarrassing. Okay. Anyway, so
where are we all
about? So Rav Moshe says. Rav Moshe says, "Don't, guys." Rav Moshe says, "Don't shecht the pheasant," because he quotes the sefer from Alami Lohoel, which is a sefer written in Germany 200 years ago. He had a masorah for pheasant, but nobody else does. It's not a thing. Pheasant is not kosher. Well, again, if it's a bat shechet masorah that no one else holds off, then maybe not.
I'm very
sensitive. You're very open orthodox. Okay. Now, two more points on the sukkah for today. Number one, how many of you here know what the term nikur, nun yud kuf vav resh, nikur? Anyone know what that is?
Like
what? No, that's the kuf.
Puncture?
Getting closer. Okay, how many of you know what the gid hanashe is? Oh, great. What is the gid hanashe in English? Can you give me an English term? I think it's called the sciatic nerve. It's the official term, right? So where is the gid hanashe located? Kafai, right? If you've ever seen a shita, which you may see this summer if you decide to go on the right trips, which you all are. If you go on the right teal this summer, you may see a shita.
I once actually.
Of course.
Right.
If you just go on the teal, tell me. I feel like if you're going to go on the teal, then we're
going to go. KBC against Ahmad this year brought a ramp to the game.
I heard.
Was there a real shita?
It was.
The did is.
And the answer me.
Guys, the did is that, let's say, I want. Gid hanashe is asr b'achila. You know that you gid hanashe, right? But we know the din is if I cook gid hanashe in a pot, there's a machlokas in the gemara in pesachim and in chulin, whether yish begidin benosin tam, which means, let's say normally if I cook chazer in a pot, if I cook basr b'chol in a pot, so not only is the food treif, the pot also has to be kasher, right? That's a din. But because the gid hanashe, we paskin, the gid hanashe doesn't give off flavor. So if I cook gid hanashe in a pot, the pot's still kosher. But what's the following? I want to eat, right? What's the best cut of steak of meat that no one's allowed to eat, right? Filet mignon, right? Why can't you eat filet mignon? Filet mignon is meat right next to the gid hanashe. It's right there. It's literally right next to it. So Spartan and hardcore like Tamanim, they eat filet mignon. Why? Because there's something called mikur. Mikur means, literally, the word in English is porging. That means is you take out all the usher fats, the chela, the gid hanashe, and everything else is mutter to eat. Ashkenazim, generally speaking, don't practice nikur anymore because we just don't know how to do nikur for the most part. Sephardim and people who know how to do nikur, they can do nikur.
Yeah, I was at a bar mitzvah and it was on the menu. Was I not supposed to eat it?
Well, if they were from Sephardim, if they're Sephardim.
Was it Sephardim?
The truth is, if you've ever eaten fancy steaks before, like hanger steaks or ribeye steaks, so if you've ever eaten those, that means that someone has probably done nikur for you to get that meat. If you've ever seen a shita on a cow, I was at a halal house a few months ago. Long story, halal, like Muslims, halal, right? Halal meat. So I was in Paramus, New Jersey. We were there for one of my speaker classes, and there's a from Sephardi guy. So this wasn't with him. It's a from Sephardi guy who has a little room in the halal house where he does shechita. So he was showing us, also, this guy hates Ashkenazim. That's like his thing. He played there, like, kind of like Rav Avadia, like Rav Avadia hates Ashkenazim. He hates Ashkenazim. And, like, the biggest insult is to call Ashkenazim for this guy. Biggest insult. So anyway, he was showing us the meat after he did the Shechita, and he showed us where the hanger steak and the ribeye steak are, and he's like, he showed us all the chilev around the area. He's like, if you ever want to eat this steak, you have to do a crazy amount of nikur. So he's like, I don't know what all your Ashkenazim are talking about. He's like, all you do is nikur all day. So anyway, that was his honor. But anyway.
Wait, he told you all you do is nikur all day?
No, meaning he said if you ever want to eat hanger steak or ribeye steak, you have to do nikur. Anyway, so the Rambam here writes about page 50.
Wait, are we ever allowed to eat slave and yama? Why not?
So the Pashas is, it's too hard to distinguish the Gira Nasha. The Gira Nasha, by the way, is a very small nerd. It's tiny. It's really, really hard. It's very easy to miss. So because there's a fear that we're going to take some of the usher fat, so we kind of just say, don't do it in the first place. Theoretically, if you have a guy who's like, one second. Okay, we're not going to get to the story about Gira Nasha. That's true, too. So guys, the halacha is that if theoretically a guy is a bucky and he knows how to do nikur properly, so that he can do nikur. But again, it's really that he knows
what he's doing.
Right. Now, the last nikonomic for today in this topic is the Radvaz. The Radvaz quotes from Rashi in Parshas Maaseh. Okay, and he says that... Rashi in Parshas Maaseh writes that Klal Yisrael, if they wanted to, would have crossed the Nile, but he says that when you go from Egypt to Gaza, to Gaza, you don't cross the Nile. Meaning, the Radvaz is asking a historically problematic question on Rashi. When Rashi is laying out the borders of Eretz Yisrael for you, he says, oh, the Jewish people wanted to cross the Nile. But he says, but it's not really true, because when you go from Israel, the main land of Israel, to Gaza, you don't cross over the Nile. It's on the other side of Israel, right? Egypt. So he writes the following. He says, He says that Nachal Mitzrayim is the Nile, and he says that the Ramaz writes that Rashi had never seen Eretz Yisrael before, and therefore didn't know what Eretz Yisrael looked like. This is not an uncommon thing, right? Many people, thousands of years ago, didn't know what Eretz Yisrael looked like. So when you're talking about the borders of Eretz Yisrael, Parshas Maaseh, it's very hard to know what's where, right? Now, he says like this, if that was really the borders of Eretz Yisrael, so then he says, how could it be usher? You know, there's a halacha that you're not allowed to live in Mitzrayim. Now, we're not going to get to the parameters of the halacha. A different time we'll talk about the details of that.
What about the Rambam?
It's also one of the kashas. The halacha is you're not allowed to live in Mitzrayim. Now, if you're going to tell me a story, the Nachal Mitzrayim spreads all through Eretz Yisrael, so you're just usher living in Eretz Yisrael. And you've also living in a very large chunk of land, which clearly is not a tenable shot. Now, he points out also, the Rambam says, that the Pasuk doesn't call the Nile Mitzrayim, Nachal Mitzrayim, but it calls it the Yaor, right? That's what, in Parshas Mikates, for example, right? It's always referred to as the Yaor. So he says, correct. So he says, Nachal, he says the Arabic term, right? Guys, what's the Arabic term for a Nachal? A wadi, right? If you've ever been to any hike in Israel anywhere, Nachal Darja, right? Which some of you probably go on at some point. Wadi is the Arabic term for a Nachal. It means a stream. Nachal is a stream of water. Okay? So he says, the Radvaz says, that Nachal Mitzrayim is called Wadi al-Arish. And he says that I passed by it, and it's overflowing on all sides. And he says that sometimes it was totally dried up. And he says it's the border between Egypt and Israel, and the area beyond that place is called Belad al-Shamia. Okay, whatever, some Arabic terms. Now, why do we put this in our Turkey discussion? So this was just mentioned, Derech Agav, just to show you that in terms of historical context and different things, that it's always hard to know. This is not really a Masorah question per se. This is more of like where are the borders of Israel? Those are things that are hard to figure out. In the context of Masorah also, some things get lost in the shuffle, get lost over time. It's just hard to know where certain things are. Okay, 1 second.